no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week comes from Columbia Workshop. We'll hear A Very Honorable Guy, their story from March 30th, 1946. After that, it's Living Fiction and The Scarlet Letter, their story from February 27th, 1954.
Presenting radio's foremost laboratory of new writing and production techniques, the Columbia Workshop. Off and on, I know Pete Samuels a matter of 8 or 10 years, up and down Broadway and in and out. But I never have much truck with him because Pete Samuels is generally broke, and there is no percentage hanging around with brokers. Today, the Columbia Workshop introduces the slightly fabulous New York characters created by Damon Runyon, one of America's most successful writers of short stories. These characters speak in an idiom of Broadway, which may be identified as Runyonese. You will encounter several of Mr. Runyon's particular friends, notably Pete Samuels.
I always try to rub up against money, for if you rub up against money long enough, some of it'll rub off on you.
The girl in Pete's life is Hortense. She's so beautiful that Pete can't stand it.
Well, as for me, I've come up the hard way, clear from Newark, which is in New Jersey.
Then there's the Brain, who is called the Brain because he is so smart, and the only guy who always has the dough.
Me, I got a simple rule. When I loan a guy money, I insist upon getting it back, or some very unusual things will happen to the guy.
Pretend like now it's Mr. Damon Runyon himself to explain the story of A Very Honorable Guy. Pete Samuels is a big, heavy guy with very funny feet. Dave the Dude says Pete wears violin cases for shoes. Of course, this is not really true because Pete cannot get either of his feet in a violin case, unless it is a case for a very large violin, such as a cello. The remarkable thing about Feet's feet is they go off in different directions under him, very sharp. So if you see Feet standing on a corner, it is very difficult to tell which way he is going. As a matter of fact, the boys make small wages on this latter proposition from time to time. Well, Feet is in a nightclub called the Hot Box, dancing with a showgirl called Hortense Hathaway. Hortense is a big blonde with plenty to say. She is standing on Feet's feet as if she is on sled runners, and Feet never knows it. He only thinks the old gondolas are a little extra heavy to shove around this night, because Hortense is no invalid. In fact, she's a good, rangy welterweight. It's plain that Feet is very fond of her indeed, and it takes plenty of dough to be fond of a doll like Hortense. She's one of those babies who is never happy unless she covers 5 hot spots in one evening.
Hortense, these are such moments as I go for when we are strictly cheek to cheek.
That is nice, Pete, because I'm having the same thoughts myself.
And the fact that you are extremely lovely tells me I'm the envy of the joint.
That is certain. From what I see, there is very little class here tonight besides us.
I have not noticed because I'm only thinking about you. To the rest, I'm unconscious.
Pete.
Yes, sugar?
Let us go back to the table and call for the check.
There's no hurry, Hortense.
I wish to go somewhere else.
Baby, I prefer to rest here and admire your beauties.
And are you admiring my new bracelet?
That little piece of chipped ice. Who gave you that bit of crockery?
A gentleman. It's more than you ever gave me.
I'll provide you with so many bracelets you won't be able to bend your elbow.
When, Pete, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, you temporarily right now.
Monsieur Fitt, if you please.
Some other time, Henri. We do not wish to be cut in on, and anyhow, Hortense has no yen to dance with a help in this joint.
Monsieur Fitt, I implore you to dance every other tenth dance. The customers are complaining they cannot get on the dance floor.
Why not, I'd like to know?
Because Monsieur Fitt's feet are so large, no? And the dance floor is so small, yes?
Well, of all the nerves.
Well, I assure you I regret it, madame.
Never mind. Come on, Fitt, let's get out of this joint.
You grieve me greatly. But if you wish to settle the check...
The check? Oh, yeah. How do you clock it?
Exactly 28 bucks.
That was 28, you mentioned?
Maybe the gentleman wishes to add it up in great detail?
No, no, but it happens by a sudden thought I conclude that we are not in such a hurry after all.
Oh.
Just drop a check on the table. If I change my mind, I'll call you.
Well, whenever you like.
You look funny, Pete. Aren't you feeling well?
I suddenly feel a slight chill with hot flashes. A very large discomfort is coming over me.
Well, settle up with Henry and let's scream.
Wait a minute, Horty. Just rest yourself here.
What now, sugar?
I see Big Ben over there, which reminds me of a small proposition I wish to make him.
Pete, we have very little time to dally over a piece of business.
But it only takes me 2 minutes, Horty, though it'll seem like 2 years, more or less.
Well, hurry up, precious. This place is beginning to get in my ear.
Faith, glad you came over.
Hello, Ben. It is indeed fortunate that you were in this joint and I get a gander at you as I'm leaving.
Faith, this here is my pal, the brain.
Hiya.
I'm happy to meet you. Ben, I would like to make a little...
Don't ask. I am very light. In fact, without dough of any description whatsoever.
My condition at this time is very critical. This joint puts a bite on me for 28 clams and I'm holding not more than 4 bob, including a few nickels and dimes.
Oh, that's tough, Faith. Yeah, but look, the brain here runs a modest financial business.
Very modest.
My luck must be changing to steer me into such a windfall.
Hey, you hear how light feet is, brain. Maybe you could stake him to a few slugs here.
No, I ain't so sure it's a safe investment.
If I am not in such critical shape, I will take offense at such a slurring crap.
Feet is a very honorable guy, brain. I will guarantee him personally.
Why you need this dough?
To tally up with Henri here and round off a few outstanding odds and ends.
Feet always makes good. His reputation is perfect.
I managed to get along for many years now. As a matter of fact, I had to make my own living since I'm 11 years old.
What'd you do before that?
Maybe he was going to college. Go on, slip him a few skins.
Ordinarily, at this season, I will be in Miami or Havana with the other hands, making myself a little honest scratch at the tracks, counseling the citizens of what horses to bet on. But since I trip over this doll, Hortense Hathaway, I decide to stay here for the pinochle. Especially since I win this all-wool overcoat off of Nick the Greek in 2 rounds of casino.
Well, how much you want to pinch me for?
Outside the 4 bob I mentioned before, I am clean as a baby's mine.
How much?
$100 will spring me here and leave me a bob or two for my hard-hearted landlady who was beyond listening to reason.
Well, now a C note is a bit high. Will half a C take the heat off?
I do not wish to dicker, and I'm grateful at that. It would distress me for Hortense to look on while I square a $28 beef with the owner of this box.
You know, sometimes a guy owing 50 bucks naturally has a great desire to take it on the whiz.
Feed is not going to do such a thing as long as Hortense is around. I can see one hair of her head is stronger than the Atlantic cable.
Oh, well, now I'm very glad to hear this. All right, I expect the half a C to come home Monday night, 6 sharp, plus 5 bucks interest.
That's very little time to round up such a sum, but I'll give the proposition plenty of attention.
A little bird tells me you're sometimes negligee about your obligations.
I too hear these lies about Feet, but at least half of them are run through. He is not so bad as many thousands of citizens think.
Yeah, all right, all right. Okay, here's the 50, and remember, Monday night, 6 o'clock, or I'll be very impatient.
I will keep it in mind. Good evening.
I'll lay 200 to 100 that this pancake I just saved from rack and ruin don't pay off in time.
I'll take it.
What's so funny?
There's one thing about Feet Samuels. He is a very honorable guy. You've practically handed me a couple of C-notes.
It comes up Monday.
Pete walks into Mindy's restaurant, where he sees Big Ben sitting at a table putting on the Irish stew, which is a dish he is very fond of.
How are things, Ben?
So, Pete. Sit down.
Thank you.
You look kind of chopped down. Is anything wrong, more than usual, I mean?
I'm disgusted with being broke. I never have more than a few quarters to rub together in my pants pocket. And the toughest thing of all, I am in love. I am in love with Hortense.
Hortense? Well, Hortense is nothing but a...
Stop right here. I will not have her called the Big Baloney or whatever else big you're going to call her because I love her. I cannot live without her. In fact, I do not wish to live without her.
Does Hortense know you feel this way about her?
No, and I'm ashamed to tell her because naturally she'll expect some proof like a diamond bracelet. And naturally, I cannot give her this. But I think she likes me more than somewhat because she looks at me in a certain way.
Hey, maybe she goes for you without the hardware.
But there's some other guy who likes her also and who's buying her diamond bracelets left and right, which makes it very tough on me.
Who is this guy?
I do not know, and I do not think Hortense cares for him so much. But naturally, any doll must give serious consideration to a guy who can buy a diamond bracelet.
Naturally.
All day yesterday, I'm laying in bed thinking. And I've decided to do a very desperate act.
You're not going to go to work.
I've even given that consideration. But it does not promise the large, coarse banknotes I need. I run a few loads of Friday Joe Scotch down to Philly to have it labeled. But I learn this is against the law, and I'm liable to end up in a pokey. And besides, I cannot stand fresh air, even with the windows closed.
I understand Rusty Charlie's looking for a stick man.
No, the rolling of dice is very pleasant to my ears, but very bad for my blood pressure. And Rusty Charlie is such a character as to make my arteries harden right out loud.
Taxi jockey ain't a bad dodge. I understand there is a good percentage in finding stuff under the seat.
That's like looking for pearls and oysters.
There ought to be some way for a guy to turn an honest bob in this town.
I once won a fruit cart from a guy playing high card. This is very pleasant indeed, handling apples, pears, and even cassava melons. But the copper stole me blind, lifting apples while I slept.
Hey, Heine Schmidt is getting along with his wildcat butter plant since price control sets him. Maybe you could hustle a little butter.
Anything with Heine is a very temporary proposition, as he's only killing time until prohibition comes back. Nah, Benny, it's no use. I've made up my mind.
To do what?
I'm going to scrag myself.
Scrag yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Scragging yourself is a very serious proposition that needs considering now, as thinking about it afterwards would have little, if any, effect.
The world is packing enough weight without me.
Yeah, but it's against the law to commit suicide.
I consider that. But what the law can do to a guy who knocks himself off, I'm not able to figure out.
Pete, you realize you are putting me in a very embarrassing spot.
If you're worrying about guaranteeing me for that 50 I owe to Brain, I already consider it. In fact, that is why I've been toying with a certain proposition which was put to me yesterday. It comes from a high-shot doctor I have met from Park Avenue.
How does this happen?
It's really remarkable. It seems by accident he wanders in and sits by me here in Minty's.
Yeah?
At first, I do not care to associate with him freely as he's a fierce-looking old guy with his face covered with whiskers that stick out every which way and whose eyes peek out of those whiskers very wild indeed.
There's something surprising the customers you find in this place.
Yeah, but he's friendly. In fact, he even knows my name, which I cannot figure, unless there is gossip of my personality which has reached the Park Avenue. Though this, I do not ask him to explain. And soon we are talking of this.
Yes. And if you don't mind, tell me more of your problems. I am strangely interested.
Well, Doc, it seems I'm in a very hot spot one way and another. I'm always owing and always paying off.
I see.
So it has come to the point where I conclude I must scrag myself. I'll leave this wicked old wild.
Pete, if you have honestly made up your mind to do this, I've got an idea which will round off everything. Fine.
Then, Doc, let us not dilly-dally.
Well, doctors now and then wish a body to practice on. And good bodies are not always easy to get. Perhaps you could work out an arrangement for payment before delivery.
Doc, this is very unusual to me. How much do you think I'm worth?
Well, I'm not sure offhand, but if you're interested, come in and see me. Yes, drop in any time.
Yes, Pete, I can see this proposition has considerable merit indeed.
Then I can square up with everybody and have a few bob to the good.
I don't mind telling you, the deal has certain fascinations.
Instead of scragging myself at a loss, I end up with a net profit.
Yeah, suppose the doc wishes credit preferences that you'll show up on the slab before he puts his dough out.
I thought of that already. Didn't you guarantee me to the brain?
And I am also to guarantee you to the croaker?
You will be thoughtful and kind, then.
Yeah, I cannot see how I can do otherwise.
I appreciate your friendly gesture. Yes, Ben, maybe someday I'll do the same for you. Personally, I feel very peculiar at this moment. I have never been in this kind of establishment before.
Yeah, for our purposes, it is extremely high class.
That also makes me uncomfortable. Ben?
Yeah?
How much do you think my body will bring, as is?
Well, I figure, considering the shape you're in, 200 at least.
Why, that's a piker's price. As big as I am, ought to be worth at least a half G dead weight.
Well, maybe they buy bodies by the pound feet. I frankly do not know, as I am a green hand at this kind of a deal. Here is Doc Bodica's office. Leave us go in, huh?
Well?
We would like to see Doc Bodica.
Is he expecting you?
Personally, I'm not sure, but...
It doesn't matter. He probably won't see you anyway. Sit down.
Thanks.
What a gruesome-looking Jew.
Which is the patient?
He is.
I'll fill out a card for him. Name, please.
Pete Samuels. The doc knows me.
Oh, has the doctor treated you before?
No, but when he does, I'll be kind of a special case.
Well, I must warn you that the doctor takes very little practice these days.
That's what we want to see him about, some practice.
And I've already had some talk with him about a matter which is very important and somewhat urgent.
Oh, all right. You can go in. Go through that door.
I'm much obliged. Hi, Doc.
How do you do, gentlemen? Yes, yes. Come in. Come in.
Doctor, I've come in answer to your proposition.
My proposition? Oh, yes. I remember. You are Pete Samuels?
Uh-huh. And this is my pal, Big Ben.
Oh, yes. Very nice.
Likewise.
My, I am glad to see you.
You've struck a windfall, Doc.
I beg your pardon.
I mean about your practice. We've got what you're shy of.
Really?
Yeah, something to practice on. Doc, it's a deal we talked about yesterday.
Oh, I see. Yes, of course. Then you have thought it over?
I've given the matter considerable weight. Due to circumstances beyond my control, I have got to scrag myself. You need some practice, so it's a good promotion all around.
Well, while I regard it as a very remarkable opportunity, naturally there are a few questions to ask.
Well, Doc, it's a bargain at any price because Feet's body will afford as much practice as two run-of-the-mill bodies.
But how could I be sure of getting a delivery on him?
Oh, Feet never runs out on a deal, and I will personally guarantee delivery. If he welches, he will never be able to live in this town amongst high-class people.
He'd have to come through or go away forever. You'll guarantee that?
Right. But we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves about price.
How much?
$500?
Absurd. I'll give $100?
I do not wish to peddle myself at bargain basement prices. If I'm not pressed for time, I do not doubt I could get at least four C's by shopping around a little.
Perhaps. But you must knock off something for defects. Take your head, for example. It's shaped like a Bartlett pear.
Oh, that's nothing. He wears his hat a little tight.
If I could get that cowlick combed down, you would not consider my head pointed.
Yeah, make it 300, Doc. Feet has never had an operation. You get everything. Tonsils, adenoids, and all.
This ain't nothing. $8 worth of gold in my teeth.
Well, if I can have him with his shoes on, it's a deal. They'll be fine to plant nasturtiums in.
You got the money on you, Doc?
Yes, but when do I get the body?
Just as soon as Feet's through with it.
Not later than March 15th.
Can you make up by then, Feet?
Yeah, that'll give me time to clean up a few odds and ends.
Okay, then it's in a date, Doc. And thanks for helping us out.
Yes. Don't forget March 15th.
Okay, Doc, I'll remember. With such enthusiasm for my body, I suddenly find myself working up a case of hyperacidity.
Don't talk yourself into something, Feet. After all, you should enjoy yourself these last few days.
Well, if that is so, I figure I should Feed myself up a little so I don't cheat the doc on white.
Faith, it is true what they say. You are a very honorable guy.
That is the kindest remark I hear all day.
After you square up with the brain, what are you going to do with all that sugar?
Well, maybe I should slip a bracelet or two on Hortense and then...
I hear Long George is playing a little low ball over at Mindy's.
I might risk a few bob at Long George to see if my luck is holding.
I got a hunch when you get 3 C's from Doc for what we passed off as a body, your luck will stand at least a chucker or two.
This is a solid remark you make, Ben. I would like to run a sum I'm now holding up to maybe a half a G.
At least.
Then I could toss the boys a farewell wake and leave a few mementos to Hortense before old Doc Bodica forecloses.
What you say makes sense. And a good wake at the hot box would be very pleasant. So let us go find Long George and investigate this hunch.
Well, you never know your luck. Every type of business Feet engaged in that week, he came out on top. Roulette, chuck-a-luck, dice.
Hey, you had her in the stove tonight, Pete.
Don't crowd me, Ben. Don't crowd me.
Stud poker.
Raise you 100 without looking.
This I gotta see.
The nag.
Hey, look at that, Pete. One wouldn't come up from behind and done it.
Of course, I bet on him tonight.
Pete couldn't lose. A couple of nights later, he is down at Eddie the Pig's joint, playing head-and-head with Nathan Detroit and some other high shots, when he suddenly discovers he ain't got pockets enough to hold his dough. This keeps up until the night of his farewell wake. As he sits with Hortense in the hot box, Pete is ahead a cool $18,000.
The nicest brawl I've been at since Lightfinger Louie was elected councilman.
It was very nice of Henri to run in that corned beef. All the way from Saratoga, too.
And these bracelets. There's more here than I ever got from anybody.
Now you know why I measured your arm lengthwise.
Yeah. To get them all the way up to my elbow was a very unusual idea.
There's another piece I ordered from Harry the Slant that ought to be ready in a day or two. It's coming from Buffalo.
All the way from Buffalo?
Yeah, it's practically imported. Harry expected to pick it up in Albany, but it seems the party Harry is getting it off of does not sleep very sound and...
You are teasing me. Tell me, what is it?
It's a beautiful ring. Big as a nut, with a ruby the size of a postman's bunion.
Oh, Feet, you say the most beautiful things.
It's the inspiration you throw off, sugar. Tonight I'm inclined to speak of love and one thing and another.
This is your night, Dumpling. Whatever you have to say, I will listen.
Maybe a light workout would help the mood I'm feeling. Do you wish to dance?
No, Sugar Pie. The dance floor is so crowded that if I should faint, it would be at least an hour before I could fall.
You might be right at that.
Feet. You don't seem exactly yourself tonight. Is something disturbing you?
It's the date, I guess. March 15th.
Do you mind if I ask you something?
No. Ask.
How come you're so well-heeled all of a sudden?
Well, 2 weeks ago, I closed a deal which nets a little scratch, and every day since, I've been doing nicely, which includes beating Long George at lowball, and till now, I hold 18 G's.
That reminds me. Have you ever considered settling in with an ever-loving wife to keep you company?
If it were not for this deal I speak of, I would put up such a proposition to you. But certain commitments choke off entertaining such an idea.
I could learn to love you, Pete. Especially with all that sugar you're holding.
I would dearly love to shake hands with you on a matrimony proposition in which I could haul off and marry you. But I am figuring all the time you were going to tie in with this other guy who's been tossing all them bracelets at you.
Such an idea calls for a bicarb. While it is true I collect a few tokens from him, I will not marry him if I have to go back to jerking sodas.
Such a remark warms the crackles of my heart.
Pardon, Monsieur Feet, but there is a gentleman at the table with Monsieur Brain and Monsieur Benny who wishes to see you.
Toss him out for crashing a private wake. Now, sweetie pie, what were you saying?
I better see what this guy wants. I'll be back before you can polish off a boiled potato.
Well, hurry, sweetie.
Oh, ho! There you are, you swindler.
Doc Bodiger, take it easy. This wake you crashed is my final send-off. March 15th isn't up for at least 15 minutes, and my watch may be a little fast. Hello, Ben. Hello, Brain.
I guaranteed delivery on you, Feet.
Yeah, and I understand this Kroger bought you when you were flat. Now, remember, if he didn't give you that dough, I'd have been out looking for you for that half a C.
What you say is true, and Doc here knows only yesterday I offered to buy myself back for five C's, a clean $200 profit to Doc, but he won't budge.
I do not wish to sell you back to yourself. Your pear-shaped head fascinates me, and your facial expression is not unlike the missing link. Besides, I want your shoes for my nasturtiums.
Now, I know you don't want to spoil the party by taking a powder and putting a black mark against your credit feet.
I put the proposition up to a lawyer who tells me he does not think the deal will hold up in court. But I do not wish to go to court because the last time in court, I'm held as a material witness for 10 days in the clink.
Well, personally, I consider this a very dishonorable idea. What with me and Benny practically underwriting this proposition, the least you can do is to turn up on that slab as per agreement.
I must admit that since I'm in front 18 G's, the proposition has lost some of its appeal. In fact, all of it.
You have less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, so you won't feel self-conscious, Fee. We will turn our backs whilst you kick yourself off.
Sure, a sidle of Friday Joe's homemade scotch will get you under the deadline.
Say, Fee, what's the idea of letting me... Oh... You.
My darling little lambkin.
Hortense, I see you already know Doc Bodiger.
No one. He's the lug that's been giving me those bracelets, trying to induce me to matrimony.
This changes the odds.
This scratches the horse.
Park yourself, Horty, right here by me. Things may be looking up.
The situation is unchanged, except your time is up.
What's he talking about?
It's like this, Horty. I peddle myself to this guy for three C's, so I have a little tour to get you a few trinkets and eat out for a few times before I scrag myself.
You do this for me?
As I live and take a few last breaths, that is why I dodged the matrimony proposition you made me tonight.
Nobody I know ever makes such a sacrifice as to hock their body for me. Never mind this deal. This old fool was pulling it fast.
Now, wait a minute, Horton.
Slam you before I chuck a moth in your whiskers.
You don't look so good, Doc. The guarantee's off.
Now, wait a minute, my friends. I am a widower of long standing and not a crackpot, as you may suspect. Although I have relatives that will give you an argument on the latter point. You see, I fell madly in love with Hortense when I saw her play the part of the sunflower in the scandals. When I arranged to have Feet Samuels come to my office 2 weeks ago, I had the idea that if I make a deal to buy his body, he will wait until the time comes and then run away and leave Hortense for me. When I heard he was here tonight, I thought I could frighten him into leaving.
The proposition has taken a funny twist.
If Feet will give me back my money and Hortense will return the presents, I would be happy to forget the whole thing.
Well, now, that sounds like a reasonable offer.
Here is your three C's.
Thanks.
The bracelets I keep. After all, I put in a lot of time with this foul ball.
Then let me have just one little bracelet. There's a beautiful hat-check girl at a certain nightclub that I may wish to marry.
I'll just hold on to it till she says yes. Then I'll give her one little bracelet as a wedding present from you. To me. To her.
Thank you, Hortense.
All right, come on, Doc. Me and Benny will take you over to Mindy's for a cup of coffee and a Bismarck herring.
Goodbye, Hortense. I shall always remember you most fondly.
Don't linger, you two-timer.
So long, boys.
And so long, Pete. Be safe.
Alone at last. Now, what were you saying?
Now that my health is again worth considering, let's get out of this smoke pot.
Not till you tell me. It was about love, remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see if I can find the words.
Say anything. I'll answer yes.
Well, when I first seen you, I fell in love with a pretty face. Now I wish to marry the whole girl.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Damon Runyon's A Very Honorable Guy, as adapted for radio by John Morrow. The original musical score was composed and conducted by John Gart. The cast included John Gibson, Elspeth Eric, Ed Begley, Jack Hartley, Joe DeSantis, Larry Haynes, Millard Mitchell, and Janet Fox. Jack Mosman produced and directed today's program for the Columbia Workshop. Next week, the Columbia Workshop will present an original cantata entitled The Last Speech with a score by Lou Cooper and a libretto arranged by Carl Kammer with excerpts from Stephen Vincent Benet. Albert Ward will direct for the workshop. Our announcer is Sandy Becker. Do you have a little sum of money that you'd like to invest? A nest egg that you'd like to see grow bigger? Maybe the stock market has looked pretty good to you lately, but nobody knows how long it'll stay that way. There are any number of investments, any number of propositions waiting for your hard-earned cash. But none of them is as safe as United States savings bonds, the same bonds you formerly bought as war bonds. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Living Fiction. Northwestern University, in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company, brings you a radio dramatization of a timeless story, The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, another in a series of Living Fiction. The founders of a new colony have invariably found it necessary to allot one portion of the virgin soil as a cemetery and another as a prison site. The grass plot before the jail on a certain summer morning of the late 17th century was occupied by a large number of Puritan inhabitants of Boston, all with their eyes intently fastened on the iron-clamped oaken door. But let us bend an ear to a few of the gossips in the multitude. They can no doubt tell the story better than I.
Good wives, I'll tell ye a piece of my mind. It would be greatly for the public good if we women should have the handling of such a transgressor as this Hester Prynne. Well, what think ye, gossips? If the hussy stood up for judgment before us, would she come off with such a sentence as the worshipful magistrates have awarded?
No, no!
Mary, I trow not. The magistrates are God-fearing gentlemen, but merciful overmuch.
Aye.
At the very least, they should have put a brand of hot iron on Hester Prynne's forehead.
The woman has brought shame on us all and ought to die.
Mercy on us, good housewife. Is there no virtue save what springs from a wholesome fear of the gallows? This is the hardest word yet.
If I had my way, the woman would be...
Peace! Hush now, gossips. The lock is turning in the prison door.
How she repels the town beagle's hold on her. Walks of her own accord.
She carries her babe in her arms.
And the infant does not hide the red letter on her breast.
How elaborately she's embroidered it with swirls of gold thread.
She hath good skill at her needle, that's certain. What did ever a woman before this brazen hussy contrive such a way of showing it?
Peace, neighbors, do not let her hear you. Not a stitch in that embroidered letter, but she has felt in her heart.
Make way, good people, make way in the king's name. Open a passage, and I promise ye, Mr. Prynne shall be set on scaffold where man, woman, and child may have a sight of her brave apparel from this time till an hour past meridian. A blessing on the righteous colony of the Massachusetts, where iniquity is dragged out into the sunshine. Come along, Madam Hester, and show your scarlet letter in the marketplace. Yes.
Now, let us get nearer to the scaffold where she will stand.
Aye, look you. Who is that man on the outskirts of the crowd?
Why, my people, I've never seen him before. He seems on in years, slightly deformed in one shoulder.
He's addressing himself to one of the townsmen. I should like to know what he has to say.
I pray you, good sir, who is this woman? And wherefore is she here set up to public shame?
You must be a stranger in this region, friend, else you would have heard of Mistress Hester Prynne.
Aye, you say truly I am a stranger. Will you please to tell me, therefore, of this woman's offenses?
She was the wife of a certain learned man, English by birth, who was minded to cross over and cast his lot with us of the Massachusetts. To this purpose, he sent his wife before him, remaining himself to look after some necessary matters. Marry, good sir, in some 2 years or less, no tidings have come of this gentleman, Master Prynne, and his young wife being left to her own misguidance. Where, look you, the babe in her arms.
Aye, and who may be the father of yonder babe?
Of a truth, friend, that matter remaineth a riddle. Madam Hester absolutely refuseth to speak.
Her husband should come himself to look into the mystery.
Our magistrates have not put in force the extremity of the law against her, which is death. but in their great mercy have doomed Mistress Prynne to stand only a space of 3 hours on the platform of the pillory, and then, for the remainder of her natural life, to wear a mark of shame, the scarlet A upon her bosom.
A wise sentence. She will be a living sermon against sin. But it irks me that the partner of her iniquity should not stand on the scaffold by her side. But he will be known. He will be known.
The Reverend Wilson is risen on the scaffold. See, he's going to speak.
Hearken to me, Hester Prynne. I have striven with my younger brother in the service of God, under whose preaching you have been privileged to sit, that he should try to persuade you to divulge the name of him who tempted you to this grievous fall. Good Reverend Dimmesdale, the responsibility of this woman's soul lies greatly with you. Will you not change your mind and exhort her to repentance and confession?
Hester Prynne, thou hearest what Reverend Wilson says and seest the accountability under which I labor. If thou feelest it is for thy soul's peace, I charge thee to speak out the name of thy fellow sinner and sufferer. Be not silent for any mistaken pity and tenderness for him. Take heed how thou deniest to him who perchance has not the courage to seize it for himself, the bitter but wholesome cup that is now presented to thy lips.
Woman, speak out the name. That and thy repentance may avail to take the scarlet letter off thy breast.
Never. It is too deeply branded. You cannot take it off.
Speak, woman! Speak and give your child a father!
I will not speak. My child must seek a heavenly father. She shall never know an earthly one.
It is said that after she returned to prison, Hester Prynne's calm manner gave way to one that was overwrought.
A sort of physician was called in.
Aye. The stranger we saw in the marketplace this morning. The one with the deformed shoulder.
He seems to be a learned man with herbs and leeches.
I saw thee in the marketplace today.
I know thou didst. Drink this potion.
I have thought of death. Have wished for it. Yet if death be in this cup, I bid thee think again ere I drink it.
Dost thou know me so little, Hester Prynne? If I imagined a scheme of vengeance, what could I do better than let thee live? Drink. Hester, I ask not how thou hast fallen in the pit. It was my folly and thy weakness. What had I, a man already in decay, what had I to do with beauty and youth like thine? From the moment when we came down the old church steps together, a married pair, I might have beheld that scarlet letter blazing at the end of our path.
Thou knowest I was frank with thee. I felt no love nor feigned any.
I thought I could warm thee by the warmth thy presence gave me.
I have greatly wronged thee.
We have wronged each other. Between us the scale hangs fairly balanced. But Hester, the man lives who has wronged us both. Who is he?
Ask me not. That thou shalt never know.
Thou mayest cover up thy secret from the prying multitude. But as for me, I shall seek this man as I have sought truth in books and gold and alchemy. Sooner or later he will be mine.
Thy words interpret thee as a terror.
One thing I would enjoin upon thee. Huss, thou hast kept the secret of thy paramour. Keep likewise mine. Breathe not to any human soul that thou didst ever call me husband. Should thou fail me in this, beware.
I will keep the secret.
And now, Mistress Prynne, Roger Chillingworth, as I shall henceforth be known in Boston, leaves you alone.
Why dost thou smile so at me? Hast thou enticed me into a bond that will prove the ruin of my soul?
Not thy soul, Hester. No, not thine.
There goes Hester Prynne across the street with a child, Pearl.
I should think she'd be too ashamed to bring her into town with her.
It cannot be helped, living as she does in that lonely cottage out from the town. There's no one to leave the child with.
See how her letter gleams in the sun? As if it were on fire.
Yeah, fire with sin? How old is the child now?
3 years. One might call her beautiful if she were not the product of Satan.
Just see how the woman keeps her dressed. Like a bird of royal plumage.
She's going toward Governor Billingham's mansion.
I understand. He ordered a pair of embroidered gloves from her for an important occasion. Hey.
Yes?
Is the worshipful Governor Billingham within?
He hath the Reverend Dimmesdale with him, and also the physician, Mr. Chillingworth.
I will enter and wait.
Very well.
Look. Look, Mother. In the big, shiny kettle. I see thee. And thy letter shines so bright.
Hush, child. I hear voices coming.
What have we here?
Good morrow, thy worship.
It is well thou hast come, Hester Prynne. The council has been discussing whether we should trust an immortal soul, such as yon child, to the guidance of one who has stumbled and fallen. Were it not better for thy little one that she be taken out of thy charge and clad soberly and disciplined strictly and instructed in the truths of heaven and earth?
God gave her into my keeping. I will not give her up. Reverend Dimmesdale, thou wast my pastor and hadst charge of my soul and knowest me better than these men. Speak for me. I will not lose the child.
There is truth in what she says. God gave her the child in an instinctive knowledge of its nature and requirements, which no other mortal can possess. This child of its father's guilt and mother's shame has come from the hand of God. It was meant for a blessing, the one of her life. It was meant also for a retribution, too, a pang, a sting, an ever-recurring agony in the midst of a troubled joy. For Hester Prynne's sake, and no less for the child, let us leave them as Providence has seen fit to bless them.
Well said, good reverend. What say you, Mr. Chillingworth? Hath he not pleaded well for the poor woman?
Aye, well, and with a strange earnestness.
Have you heard the blessed news?
Aye, the Reverend Dimmesdale, who's so long been in poor health, we feared for his life. But he's finally consented to take the advice of this physician, Mr. Chillingworth.
And not a moment too soon.
Now Mr. Chillingworth is lodged in the same house with the minister, so as to give him his closest attention at all hours.
It was Mr. Chillingworth's own idea.
An inspired one. The two will be good company for each other. They say the minister often reads in Mr. Chillingworth's room while he prepares.
Where, my kind doctor, do you gather those herbs, such a dark and flabby leaf?
Even in the graveyard, just below the window there. I found them on a grave which bore no tombstone. They're new to me. It may be they grew out of the dead man's heart and typify some hideous secret that was buried with him, and with which he had done better to confess during his lifetime.
The chance he earnestly desired to, but could not.
And wherefore not? Since all the powers of nature call so earnestly for the confession of sin, that these black weeds have sprung up out of a buried heart to make manifest an unspoken crime.
That, good sir, is but a fantasy of yours. A knowledge of men's hearts is needful to the complete solution of the problem. And I can see that the hearts holding such miserable secrets that you speak of will yield them up at that last day, not with reluctance, but with a joy unutterable.
Then why not reveal them here? Why should not the guilty ones sooner avail themselves of this unutterable solace?
They mostly do. Many a poor soul hath given its confidence to me, and what a relief I've witnessed in them afterward. How can it be otherwise?
Yet some men bury their secrets.
True, there are such men. But it may be they keep silent because they retain a zeal for God's glory and man's welfare, so that they shrink from displaying themselves black. Because henceforth no good can be achieved by them. No evil of the past redeemed by better service.
These men deceive themselves. They fear to take up the shame which rightfully belongs to them.
I wanted to ask your judgment frankly, sir, concerning the condition of my health.
Very well. I shall give it freely and honestly. This order is a strange one. The disease is what I seem to know, yet Know it not. Hath all the operation of this disease been fairly laid open to me?
How else can it be?
You would tell me, then, that I know all? Be it so. But again, he to whom only the outward and physical evil is laid open, oft-time knows but half the evil which he is called upon to cure. A bodily disease may, after all, be but a symptom of some ailment in the spiritual part. Would you therefore that your physician heal the bodily evil? How may this be unless you first slay open to him the wound in your soul?
No! No! Not to thee, not to an earthly physician. If it be the soul's disease, then I do commit myself to the one physician of the soul. He can cure or kill me. But who art thou that meddlest in this matter, that dares thrust himself between a sufferer and his God?
As with one passion, so with another. He hath done a wild thing ere now, this pious Master Dimmesdale, in the hot passion of his heart.
Hast thou been aware that Hester Prynne is not looked upon by the townspeople in the same light as 7 years ago when she first covered herself with ignominy?
And for good reason. Her charity is boundless. In all seasons of calamity, she has taken a needed place.
But even tonight, she's sitting by the deathbed of Governor Winthrop. Perhaps she'll stay till long past midnight, if she can be of use.
Come along now, Pearl. It's very late and we must be getting home.
Hester. Hester Prynne, is that you? Oh,
yes, it is Hester Prynne. I and my little Pearl.
Whence came you, Hester? What sent you?
I've been watching at the deathbed of Governor Winthrop.
Come up here, on the scaffold, Hester. And little Pearl, you've both been here before, but I was not with you. Come up hither once again, and we shall all three stand together. Give me thy hand, Pearl.
Minister?
Yes, child?
Wilt thou stand here with mother and me tomorrow noontide?
Nay, not so, my little Pearl. I shall indeed stand with thy mother and thee one other day. Not tomorrow.
What other day?
At the great judgment day. But the daylight of this world will not see our meeting.
Worthy sir.
Hester Chillingworth!
Pious Master Dimmesdale, can this be you? Well, well, indeed. We men of study whose heads are in our books have need to be straightly looked after. We dream in our waking moments and walk in our sleep. Come, good sir. And my dear friend, I pray you let me lead you home.
How did you know I was here?
Verily, I knew nothing of the matter. I had been at the bedside of the governor, doing what my poor skill might to ease him. Come with me, I beseech you, reverend sir. Else you will be poorly fit to do the Sabbath duty tomorrow.
Part of the forest we walk in today, Mother.
Yes, child.
Mother, who is that old man yonder pulling up weeds? I have seen him before.
It doesn't concern you, Pearl. Run down to the margin of the water and play with the shells until I call you.
Yes, Mother. I'll make a crown for myself out of the seaweed.
Roger Chillingworth?
Huh?
I would speak a word with you that concerns us much.
And is it Mistress Hester that has a good word for old Roger Chillingworth? I hear good tidings of you on all hands, Mistress. What see you in my face that you look at it so earnestly?
Something that would make me weep if there were any tears bitter enough. But let it pass. It is of a miserable man that I would speak.
And what of the Reverend Dimmesdale?
7 years ago in prison, you extorted a promise of secrecy from me concerning your real identity. If the life and fame of yonder man were in your hands, there seemed no choice to me. Since that day, no man is so near to him as you.
You tread behind his every footstep. You cause him to die a living death daily, and still he knows you not. And permitting this, I have acted a false part to the only man to whom it was left to me to be true.
What evil have I done this man? That he now breathes and creeps about the earth is owing all to me.
Better he had died at once.
Yea, woman, you say truly. Better he had died at once. Did ever mortal suffer what this man has? And all in the sight of his worst enemy?
Oh, hast thou not tortured him enough? Has he not paid thee all?
No. No, he has but increased the debt.
Then I must reveal your secret. He must discern thee in thy true character. There's no good for him, no good for me, no good for thee in this dark maze.
Woman, thou hast great elements. I pity thee for the good that has been wasted in thy nature.
And I thee for the hatred that has transformed a wise and a just man to a fiend. Wilt thou not yet purge it out of thee and be once more a human? I said there could be no good event for us, any of us, in this maze of evil. It is not so. There might be good for thee, and thee alone, who has it at thy will to pardon. Wilt thou reject that priceless benefit?
Peace, Hester. Peace. It is not granted me to pardon. I have no such power as thou tellest me of. Let the black flower blossom as it may. Now, go thy ways, and deal as thou wilt with the man.
Be it sin or no, I hate that man.
Good Master Dimmesdale to take one of his long walks in the forest.
Where he will meditate on some text of Holy Script.
It is surely his spiritual vigor that keeps him alive. For his body is so weak, I marvel he can walk.
I have come many days to this spot, hoping thy walks might bring thee here.
Hester, hast thou found peace?
Hast thou?
None. Nothing but despair. Hester, I am most miserable.
The people reverence thee.
Which brings only more misery because of its hypocrisy. Had I one friend, or it were my worst enemy to whom I could daily betake myself, methinks my soul might keep itself alive thereby.
Such a friend thou hast in me. But thou hast long had such an enemy, and dwellest with him under the same roof.
What sayest thou? What mean you?
That old man, Roger Chillingworth, he was my husband.
I might have known it. I did know it. Why did I not understand?
Forgive me.
I forgive you. May God forgive us both. We are not the worst sinners in the world, Hester. That old man's revenge is blacker than our sin. But, Hester, does he know your purpose in revealing his identity to me?
Yes.
And how am I longer to live, breathing the same air with a deadly enemy. Be thou strong for me, Hester. Advise me what to do.
Is the world so narrow? Does the universe lie within the compass of yonder town? Will the lead yonder forest? Oh, then there's a broad pathway of the sea.
The sea?
Yes. A ship is now in harbor that within 3 days' time will sail to Bristol. Oh, it will be a simple matter indeed to secure passage with all the secrecy necessary.
Oh, Hester, now tell us of running a race to a man whose knees are tottering beneath him. There is no strength, no courage left in me to venture into the wide world alone.
Thou shalt not go alone.
Wherefore have all the people left their work today, Mother? Why have all these people come into the marketplace?
They wait to see the inaugural procession pass. There will be the governor and magistrates and the ministers and all the great people. There will be music and marching soldiers.
Will the minister be here? And will he hold out both his hands to me and kiss me as he did in the forest yesterday?
He will be here, child, but he will not greet thee today. Now must thou greet him.
Look, Mother, here comes the man who lives on the ship. The man you talked to yesterday afternoon.
Good morrow, Mr. Sprint.
Good morrow, Captain.
I must make the steward get ready one more berth than you bargained for, I learned.
What mean you? Have you another passenger?
Why, know you not that another is minded to try my cabin fare with you? Aye, you must have known it. For he tells me he's of your party, and a close friend of the gentleman you spoke of, and will bring him aboard with him. His name, I believe, is Chillingworth.
Look, here comes the procession.
Aye, there's the governor.
And Master Dimmesdale. His election sermon was the greatest triumph of his life.
Such eloquence. Oh, there goes the holy man in the procession now.
Look you, Reverend Dimmesdale leads the procession line and is walking this way.
Procession.
Let me through, let me through, please.
He's walking toward the scaffold, which stands Esther Prince.
Esther, come hither. Come, my little pearl.
Madman, hold!
What is your purpose? I can yet save you. Would you bring infamy upon your sacred profession?
Methinks you are too late, tempter. Thy power is not what it once was. With God's help, I shall escape thee now. Come, Esther, come. Support me on yonder scaffold. So, you come with us, Roger Chillingworth.
Hadst thou sought the whole world over, there was no one place where thou couldst have escaped me, save on this very scaffold.
Thanks to him who led me here. Esther, is this not better than what we dreamed of in the street?
I know not. Oh, I know not.
Let me now do the will which he hath made plain before my sight. Esther, I am a dying man. So let me make haste to take my shame upon me. People of New England, ye that have loved me and deemed me holy, behold me here, the one sinner of the world. At last, I stand upon the spot where 7 years ago I should have stood. Here with this woman whose arm supports me. Oh, the scarlet letter Esther wears. You have shuddered whenever you saw it. I tell you that with all its mysterious horror, it is but a shadow of what I bear on my own breast. Behold! Behold the dreadful witness to her!
The minister tears the band from his breast!
What a scarlet letter cut out into his flesh!
Thou hast escaped me.
May God forgive thee. Thou too hast deeply sinned. Esther, farewell.
Shall we not meet again? Shall we not spend our immortal lives together?
Hush, Esther. We have sinned. That answer lies with God, who has the power to forgive all. His will be done. Farewell. Farewell.
Arthur?
Mr. Prynne? Yes, she came back to us again.
No, she left the town for a good many years.
When Master Chillingworth died, the year after the minister, he bequeathed a goodly sum to little Pearl.
And Hester returned without Pearl.
And though Hester Prynne refused to take off her scarlet letter, she became a reverenced person in the town.
And before she died, she asked that the only inscription on her tombstone be the letter A.
The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne is another in a series of living fiction presented each week by Northwestern University in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company. The Scarlet Letter was adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The cast and directors were students of Northwestern University. Hester Prynne was played by Faith Kellogg, Arthur Dimmesdale by Richard Swift, and Roger Chillingworth by Tam Spiva. The two gossips were played by Millette Alexander and Norma Leonza. Others in the cast were Jermaine Golda, Fred Posner, David Press, Jim Holston, and Dave Adams. The assistant director was Roger Running. The director was Ginger Punston. The entire production was under the supervision of John Cowan. This is Jim Hamilton speaking. This is the NBC Radio Network.
That's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Living Fiction, Columbia Workshop, past episodes of this show and all the others at relicradio.com. Got thousands of other old-time radio episodes for you there, our Shoutcast stream, and if you'd like to help support it all, donate through the website. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.